How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello and welcome to the 10th Rain and Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales with Jay King. And today, special show, we're going to give away tickets to the Celtics and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Last chance to see Kevin Garnett at the Garden, potentially. I don't know if he's coming back next year or what, but this is a good young team. You get to see KG. Here's what I'm going to do. Two code words in this show. I read the two code words at different points in the show. The first person to tweet me those two words gets the tickets. They come courtesy of TickIQ, great source for Celtics tickets. So without further ado, let's bring in Jay King after a pretty fun week for the Celtics. Big wins with the Bulls, Charlotte. Let's just get to the game that everybody wants to talk to. I don't think anybody cares about anything besides that epic double overtime game against the Warriors where they came oh so close to breaking that streak.
That was such a fun game to be at from the start. I mean, the Warriors, they're like a show. Like, I haven't seen anything like it. There were people lined up inside the tunnel, inside, not outside, inside the tunnel, to shriek as Stephen Curry jogged onto the court. Comcast aired his pregame warm-ups live. You had everybody's out there taking videos of Curry. It's like it's just a madhouse. And the Celtics just gave them everything they could have wanted. Celtics should have won that game. I mean, they had chances at the end of regulation. They had chances at the end of overtime. They were up 5 late in regulation. They played so well, I thought, defensively. And I lost you on the video.
You lost me. Okay.
Yes.
I'm still here. I still see myself.
Okay, cool. As long as you can still see yourself, okay, that's all that matters.
You. Okay.
Cool. Where the hell was that?
You're talking about how well they played defensively.
Oh, yeah. They turned the Golden State Warriors, granted Klay Thompson wasn't playing, but they turned the Warriors into essentially the Bucks offensively, which was unreal. And double overtime game, just a fun night to be in the Garden. That was probably the most important, from a basketball standpoint, not even probably, from a basketball standpoint, that was the most hyped game by far of the Brad Stevens era. And for the first time, it was hyped because of basketball. Like, we had Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce reunion before, the Doc Rivers, Paul Pierce reunion, the Rondo reunion.
Yep.
For the first time, this was basketball, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that really was an event when the Warriors came in. And the Celtics, to their credit, like you said, defensively, they held the Warriors to an offensive rating under 100, which is impossible to do. Their rating was, I think, 99.1 for the game, which is amazing to hold that Warriors team to that level of offense. It speaks a lot to just how good, how legitimately good this Celtics defense is. And there, after the game, and we got a Twitter question on this. I'm going to look that up before I get, because after the game, Brad Stevens was quick to dismiss the loss as a good loss. And the question from Dan, he said, thoughts on Brad's comment that there are no good losses. I like that mentality as the team matures, sort of Belichickian. As the coach, I think you have to say stuff like that because you don't want to have your team feel like losing is okay. But as an observer and analyzing the game, there's a lot of positive to take out of that. The defense, the ability to hang in when the Warriors were doing their thing, when Steph Curry was going all Steph Curry, for the Celtics to keep coming back and have that mentality that they're in this playoff atmosphere, that was one hell of a playoff game. They really, really played well. There is a lot to take out of that positive, I think.
Yeah. The thing about as a coach, you're not going to say, yeah, you know, we love this loss. We played so well. We almost beat the Warriors. You can't say that. They legitimately thought they were going to win that game. They thought, or at least they thought they would give themselves a chance. What Brad Stevens has always said, if we do the things we're supposed to do, we will give ourselves a chance to win. I mean, we might not pull it out, but we'll be there. And they really do believe that. And they think their defense is good enough that if they're locked in, like they obviously were against the Warriors, that they'll be close at the end. And they'll give themselves a chance, or in this case, several chances to win. They played well, and they've played well. They're now 5-2 in their last 7 games. Only losses are to the Spurs and the Warriors. They've beaten Miami on the road, Charlotte on the road, 2 of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They beat Chicago, another one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. They smacked Sacramento. They smacked – who else was it? That other team they smacked.
Those guys –
They're starting to show the consistency you want from
New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans. So they're starting to show the consistency you want from them. And this team is starting to look pretty good. They had their moments early, but it was always like they'd win 2 blowouts, lose a blowout. You didn't really know what you were going to get. Starting to kind of settle in. I think Stevens has a better handle on the rotations. That's more regular on a consistent basis. And this team is playing well. And Marcus Smart's still out.
Yeah. And well, let's get into that, because we got a ton of questions on Twitter. And there are a lot of them that kind of apply. A lot of them came regarding
Marcus Smart. Hold on. One more thing before we move on from the Warriors game. Avery Bradley was unbelievable defending Curry in that game. I have never seen anyone do a better job on Curry. Like he was hounding him. He made him look human. There were several times where he made Stephen Curry look human, which is crazy. Nobody makes Curry look that uncomfortable on the basketball court. And Bradley was just in his junk the whole game. And Turner did a good job on him too. But Bradley was like next. That was next level defense for Bradley.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm almost mad at the Celtics because they didn't give me anything to rant about today. I can't be mad at anybody. And I feel like I'm the most inspiring person in the Boston Celtics universe, because every time I tear someone a new one, they come out and they play well. I ripped on David Lee. I called him the wrong name last week, and he came out and he had a pretty good game against the Warriors, and he made some solid contributions against Charlotte. I go out and tear into Evan Turner, and he comes back and plays well. So people start asking me to start tearing into James Young. But here's the thing. It has to be organic. I can't force it. So someone really needs to screw up to draw my ire, and then they will go out and make me look horribly bad by making everything that I say about them wrong. So thanks, guys, for all of that. Let's stay with, before we go to Marcus Smart, I do want to talk about one negative thing about the Warriors game, which...
I mean, nothing to rant about, but here comes the rant.
No. It's not a rant. It's the thing about that game was, I think it highlighted the Celtics' inability to close tight games. I know I say that after they closed the tight game against the Hornets, but it's the Hornets versus a good team. So the Hornets made some mistakes, and the Celtics took advantage of that. But there is a definite issue with the Celtics closing out tight games. They don't do well in those situations. They tend to look a little panicky. And I just wonder if like against the Warriors, we saw a lot of Isaiah Thomas making bad plays down the stretch. And I just wonder if Isaiah Thomas's ego, for lack of a better term, that thing that drives him, that makes him so good at 5'9", that makes him play so well and just attack and be bigger, play bigger than he really is. I wonder if that comes back to hurt him because he wants to get into a little hero ball down the stretch of these tight games. And I said during the game that you need to move Thomas off the ball in those situations. And actually, I can't believe I'm going to say this, I think you actually have to have Evan Turner with the ball in his hands in that situation. If, you know, without Marcus Smart there, you have to have someone else with the ball in their hands and have Isaiah Thomas play off the ball and set picks to get him free and get him his shots that way. Because creating and trying to do too much, I think, ended up hurting the Celtics against the Warriors. And I don't want to say it cost them the game, but he could have definitely made some better decisions down the stretch.
I'm going to say this. I think you're complaining about their late game execution, but if Sean Livingston hadn't made that crazy left-handed tip in, if Isaiah Thomas had hit that little 10-footer over Bogut, which was a pretty good look at the end of overtime, they would have beaten the top team in the league in a double overtime game or single overtime, whenever they would have ended it. Like, they executed well. They didn't score. I do think Thomas's size hurts him in the situations at the end of regulation and overtime. Those were situations where everyone wanted Stevens to call a set, and I understand that. But they got the ball both times with like 22 seconds left, 23 seconds left. At that point, one of your biggest objectives is to leave no time on the clock. And so if you run a set, the timing has to be perfect, and that can be tough. So they miss that guy who can go get a good shot. And I do think there is something to be said that Turner might be the guy who gets the best percentage shots, but Andre Iguodala was on him. That's a vicious matchup. Mm-hmm. So Thomas going at Bogut in the pick and roll, I didn't mind that. But yeah, they missed that guy like Pierce. There aren't a lot of guys like that, but they missed that big skilled scorer who can get a decent shot, not a great shot, but a decent shot in any situation. Because, as you said, Isaiah doesn't always get that decent shot. You know, Sean Livingston blocked him at the end of regulation. And it's tough for him because of his size.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm complaining to like, – it's just an observation that I think the Celtics, they don't have that calming force. And I don't think Isaiah Thomas is necessarily the calming force or I don't know if he can be. He should obviously be taking those shots. I think the question is how is he going to get those shots? And this is why I say you're better off, I think, with somebody like Turner handling the ball and at least starting the offense and running Thomas off of screens. And, you know, look, the Warriors are going to switch everything. That's the strength of their defense, their ability to switch everything and really not have much drop off. But you could at least try to get a pretty good matchup with Thomas off the ball, setting a couple of screens, forcing a couple of those switches. Then you get him the ball and then you let him move. He has a tendency to have a little bit of that hero ball, and that it serves him well through most of the game, but in those tight situations, I think sometimes it can actually be a little bit of a detriment, a deterrent, and the Celtics need to figure out a little bit. It's like the next step of their progression. They need to figure out how to execute some of those plays to get those good looks late in games.
I'm honestly not that worried about their late game execution. Thomas was, I believe, after he got to the Celtics, tops in the league in fourth quarter scoring last year or very close to it. I haven't checked the stats this season, but I'm sure he's not too far away. So then they've got Avery Bradley. They run some nice sets for him. Stevens is always good at after timeout sets. Mm-hmm. I, I'm I'm not worried about their late game execution. I do think though, your point about Thomas getting out of himself a little bit is not a huge issue, but I do think he does that at times. Kelly Olynyk at the end of the first overtime was wide open on the wing.
Yeah.
And he could have found him. And I think, you know, if that's in the middle of the third quarter, he probably does find him. But he wanted to be the one that ended it. And I understand that he's the best scorer on the team. He thinks, you know, this 12 footer is our best option. But I do think that maybe he tries to do a little bit more in those situations than he does during the rest of the game.
Yeah. And look, Isaiah Thomas obviously is a really, really good player.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be an all-star this year. It's just, you know, a minor thing that I think needs to be corrected. It's not a huge, huge deal, but I think it needs to be corrected. And you look, the difference between Isaiah Thomas last year and this year, I think you saw it last night against the Hornets, 13 assists. He's not a huge assist guy, but he's become a lot better this year because he's willing to pass more than he has passed in the past. How's that for a line? but he's, I think his willingness to pass has opened a lot more for this team and opened up a lot more for himself offensively. And he's added that little floater, which we all know he was working on over the summer. It's a very nice progression. And the thing about Isaiah Thomas is he can progress. He can continue to get better. So, and I think that's just what he needs to do. This is just one next step that will make him even better than he is now, is just to stay within himself in those situations. So, all right, let's start this little ticket giveaway. I think it's time to give out a code word. So, again, what we're doing here, I'm going to give out two code words. Here's the first one, truth. Truth is the first code word. Later on, I'm going to give you a second one. And the first person to tweet me those two words gets tickets to the game, to the Warriors game, to the Timberwolves game, courtesy of Tick IQ. Okay? So your first code word is truth. Now, remember, if you don't win, you can still get into the Garden for the game against KG and the Timberwolves for only $20 on the Tick IQ app. Now, I have this app. It's really cool. It's awesome. We use it at Reds Army for all of our ticket purchases. Just get on that app, click away, and you can get your access to really the cheapest tickets on the market at that point. They always have the cheapest Celtics tickets. And on top of it, you can get an instant discount using their IQ point system. So go to your App Store, Google Play, iTunes Store, and download the new Tick IQ app. That's Tick IQ, T-I-Q-I-Q. All right, on to Marcus Smart, because Marcus Smart is coming back. And he's been really, when we ask for people to tweet us the questions, Marcus Smart is at the top of people's minds. So Max asks, who loses minutes when Marcus Smart returns? Tyler, what happens when Marcus Smart comes back? Justin, with the way Isaiah and Avery have played thus far, who do you see moving to the bench, assuming Smart starts once he's back? George, would you shake up the starting lineup and put Smart in when he comes back? I think Bradley is better than Smart off the bench. Tons of questions. Those are all about Marcus Smart. So let's look ahead. He's still probably, what, a week or two away?
Yeah, probably a week. I would say a week or two, maybe closer to, I guess a week or two is pretty close to the new year anyway. He'll be close to the new year, I think. He's starting to move a little better when you see him on the sidelines and stuff like that. Last I heard from Brad Stevens, he hasn't been cleared for contact yet, or cleared for cutting yet, rather. So he's not particularly close, but he'll be back around the new year.
Let's assume January 2nd against the Nets is when Smart comes back. So you've got a few games left before he returns. The rotations look pretty solid right now. Like you said earlier, Brad Stevens is starting to figure out who's coming in, who's playing. James Young is getting minutes right now, but those will probably go away when Smart returns, I would think. But let's start with the starters. Which of the two current starters at guard do you think moves to the bench?
I think you bring Bradley off the bench. I think Thomas, I mean, I go back and forth on this, but I think Thomas, his playmaking is needed in that first unit. You don't necessarily need so much of it against benches. They've gotten away with Evan Turner at point guard. And if you have Smart, Bradley, Thomas, those guys will split backcourt minutes too. They'll always have a couple of ball handlers on the court. So I would have Thomas in the starting lineup, probably Bradley coming off the bench, but he's been playing great in the starting lineup. It's not a bad thing to have three guys capable of starting in the backcourt. But you could really go just about any way with that. And I'm really interested to see what Stevens does with it, because there's not an obvious decision.
No, it's not obvious. That's the thing. I used to think it was obvious. I was very obviously pro Thomas off the bench. And I still wouldn't mind that. I don't think that would be a bad call. But we didn't, at that point, we also didn't have Avery Bradley as a knockdown shooter, which is a nice new development for the Celtics. All of a sudden, that kid can shoot. He's been nailing threes anywhere. We started out the season saying, Avery Bradley, stick to the corner and make your backdoor cuts, and you just be an overflow type scorer. And now all of a sudden, he's getting dribble handoffs above the break and nailing threes. So if that can continue and he comes off the bench and still does that off the bench, then that's not bad, because the Celtics defense has shown it can be really good with Isaiah Thomas in the starting lineup. So the way they play their defense, he's not hurting them. And that was always the biggest knock on Thomas, that he was a defensive liability. But the Celtics defense is obviously playing awesome, and he's working so well within that. He's not a great individual defender, but he's working within the system and playing really well. So why not have a good individual defender on the second unit in Avery Bradley? And maybe you can boost up the second unit's defense that way and continue that role for the rest of the game. And if Bradley's knocking down those jumpers, then there's no offensive drop-off either. Kelly Olynyk, if he's playing the way he's been playing the past couple of games, then you're looking at something there. This is a good team.
This is a good team. You are right there. They're
it's a good team. They've got a lot of good players. It works.
It's a good team. Eastern Conference is crazy, though. Like, top to bottom, I don't know what to make of the Eastern Conference other than the Cavaliers. There are tons of, like, what is Charlotte? Are they a legitimate number two contender? How are they number two in the Eastern Conference entering last night? What is going on in the Eastern? I have no clue what to make of a lot of teams. I think we're starting to see, obviously the Eastern Conference is much more competitive, but I don't think I've really learned. I don't have a good handle on a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference.
No.
From Charlotte to Detroit, even the Knicks, the Hawks even. I don't know what a lot of these teams are about. I don't know exactly how good they are. The Celtics, same thing. Are they top four in the East? Are they 5, 6, 7? I don't know. They're somewhere in there.
Yes. Yes. There any of that? Yeah. The only thing that they're not is number one. And then anywhere they could fall anywhere from two to out of the playoffs. Legitimately.
Yeah.
They could.
I don't think they'll miss a playoff. I think they're gonna be a playoff team. Although I keep thinking that some team in the East is going to fall off at some point. And so far that hasn't happened. So right now it's a jumbled mess, and
You got to think that Charlotte is playing way above their heads. Right? They were top 10 offense and defense.
Although they're tough to guard. It's like they have even their big guys, Kaminsky, Hawes, Marvin Williams, those guys spread the floor. And then they have Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lin, who are two really good penetrating guards. Like those guys aren't perfect guards, but if you give them space, they work. So I don't know how legitimate they are. That's why I have no clue with that team. Like, yeah.
Kemba Walker is taking, I think, a little bit of a leap this year. And you tell me if you disagree, but I think Kemba Walker is starting to get a little more notoriety. I think he's playing pretty well. I think he's going to start making that jump into. He's going to be their all-star. So
I think that probably has a lot to do with the shooting, though. You know, the last few years their offense has been really clogged. They had Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. They had Al Jefferson in the paint. Just tons of guys in the paint. Kemba Walker is really quick. He can get by people. He can get to the paint. So give him space, and he's a different player. And I think you see that with a lot of guys around the league. They need the situation to be right. Like he's obviously been a good player before, but now he's better. And I think it has as much to do with the team around him as it does with himself.
No, that's true. I mean, look, that applies to everybody. That applies to Isaiah Thomas. If you don't space the floor for Isaiah Thomas, what's he going to do? He's going to look pretty bad in certain circumstances. So it's so funny. The NBA sometimes with these guys, it's so much about luck as much as it is as about skill, because you could be in a bad situation on a bad team and look horrible and things just snowball from there. But if you're on the right team with the right guys around you, that talent can really, really flourish. So, and they got tons of shooters, man. That every time I looked up, they were shooting a three. Charlotte just loves to shoot the three. They're actually playing pretty well for what today's NBA is. That's what they're doing. They've really embraced today's NBA, and then it's working out for them. So, okay. So, back to the Celtics lineup, because the next question that I got a lot of.
Hold on. Before we go on from the smart thing, I think the biggest impact his return will have is that the Celtics will go small more often. I think Brad Stevens has really wanted to go small, and you saw him at the end of the Charlotte game with Jay Crowder at the four. You saw him in stretches of the Golden State Warriors game with Crowder at the four. He wants to do that more often. He loves that lineup. He just wants – the backcourt hasn't been deep enough. Now, you know, when Smart comes back, James Young has been giving solid minutes. RJ Hunter will be back probably as soon as Tuesday against the Cavaliers. So all of a sudden, their backcourt will look a lot deeper, and Stevens will have more options to go small. I still think that means David Lee's minutes will be the ones that are limited, but depending on the matchups, they could go a lot of ways in the front court. But I think that will be the biggest impact of Smart. Forget the starting lineup. Forget whether, you know, it's Isaiah, Avery, Marcus off the bench. That playing small more often will be very helpful to the Celtics team. That lineup with Crowder at the four is a really good one.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of where I was going with these questions, this next set of questions, because a million people wanted to ask about James Young, and this affects him. So let me just rattle off these tweets. What have you seen from James Young the past few games? Is it a good thing? Alex, Young looks like he'll learn more from actually playing. Jack says, is it me or is James Young a defensive liability? Seems to get beat off the dribble too easily. Justin says, have we finally started to see the potential in Young after nice stints these past few games? Justin says his defense has been impressive. So a lot of questions here about James Young. And he will be directly impacted by the Marcus Smart return. So does James Young – oh, here's another one. Last night, James Young played his best scoreless game as a Celtics. Yes, that comes from Muddy Gravel. Lots of people are impressed by James Young, I think, because the bar was so low that him going out there and not being a complete disaster ends up being a positive thing. And he has not been a complete disaster. He's actually played pretty well for him. I don't think he's been a defensive liability. I think we've seen him more engaged, especially on the weak side. He's done most of what he's been asked to do in these situations, and he definitely hasn't hurt the team, and he's helped in a few of these situations, made a couple of shots. But when Marcus Smart returns, how much more are we going to see about James Young?
Probably not a lot. And when RJ Hunter returns too, that's another layer of this. But for the first time, I think James Young has shown consistent defensive potential. Like, he hasn't been perfect defensively, but he stayed in front of some point guards. They had him guard Ish Smith, who might be the fastest guy in the league in New Orleans. He did a good job staying in front of him. They had him guard Etuan Moore for stretches. He was giving him fits. When you're 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan and you can stay in front of point guards and bother their shot, that's huge. That's huge. So he's gonna be able to guard multiple positions. I think these three games, by far the best of his career, because he hasn't shot the ball too well. He's still making a decent impact. And for him, that's a major, major, major step in his development, because he had been completely lost on defense before. And this coaching staff always talks about how hard he's been working behind the scenes, how he's starting to get ready, and we didn't see it. We never saw it. He didn't play a single meaningful minute until three games ago. He was almost going to the D League. He was literally seconds away from boarding a flight to join the Maine Red Claws. And then, you know, two games later, he's playing crucial minutes against the Golden State Warriors and helping lead a big run against them.
Yeah.
He had that big offensive rebound. He had the pass to David Lee. By far the best minutes of his career. He's still 20. Like, this is the first time he's become an interesting piece now. He's made himself an interesting piece again. And that's a big development for this team. And I do think the defensive potential has been great. Like, he's finally cutting off some drives. He's finally becoming more aware of stuff. He did some very good things, I thought, especially defensively, which hasn't been his forte at all.
It's almost not what the Celtics need, in a way. Another guy that deserves minutes. I'm not complaining, but it's just funny that in all of this,
I'm not sure he deserves minutes once Smart gets back. Like, I think the cutoff between whoever's last in the perimeter rotation once Smart gets back, who is it, like, maybe Evan Turner even. So the cutoff there is pretty steep. I still think James Young has a lot of room to improve until he gets there. But the fact that he is showing potential is huge.
Yeah. No, of course. But now you can start making the argument that this guy needs to play with the Celtics more than he needs to play with the Red Claws. But he needs to play somewhere. And if his minutes are going to drop in Boston, he might as well go to Maine. And I'm sure they're going to send him to Maine. But it's just really interesting, because now we're starting to see some pieces for the future. Like, this team right now is pretty good. And whatever happens with the Celtics this year happens. They, you know, go to the conference finals like you think, Jay, or go to miss the playoffs. Whatever they do, whatever happens, happens. But they're a good team, but there's a lot that's going to change between this year and next. They have a lot of guys who might be gone after this year. And you look at, like, Turner could be gone.
The only guys that really are locked in are the young guys, Crowder, Bradley, Thomas. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty moving forward.
Yeah, lots of uncertainty moving forward. And then you throw into the mix here now James Young, RJ Hunter. Jordan Mickey is playing really well in Maine. So here's a guy who is extending his range in Maine. Like, he's playing pretty well. And you got a guy here that may be the future stretch four for the Celtics. Who knows how that's going to turn out, but it's just funny to see guys start to show their potential you know, when Hunter comes back, you know how much I love RJ Hunter. Rozier, no, you know, we haven't seen Rozier in a while, but he's shown some decent things. He's clearly not ready yet, but you look to these guys, all of these young guys, it's pretty fun actually to think about how different this team's going to be next year, and they could still be really good.
I think, you know, unless they have a chance to make a big splash, I think this group has shown enough that the front office probably wants to keep a lot of it. You know, Sullinger, I don't know what they'll do with Tyler Zeller because obviously he hasn't played a lot of minutes this year, but next year David Lee is a free agent. Amir Johnson could be, so who knows what they'll do with Zeller. I think they want to keep Sullinger. I suspect they don't want to make too many changes unless they can make a big, big change. You know, this group has shown a lot of potential, and it's still really young. It's got a top five defense, solid, solid top five defense, and a lot of guys have a lot of room to grow. You know, who knows what Smart will be? Now, is James Young, will he be a solid rotation player next year? Like, that makes a big difference with what they do with Turner or whatever. Like, there are a lot of different ways this team can go. But it's nice to see guys like Young making an impact when he has a chance. And I think he needed that. I mean, he had, like, just a disastrous first year plus in the NBA. It was like he had that one 13-point game his rookie season, and then from that point on, like, just it was all downhill. Even summer league, he struggled, and he kept working. He kept working, and finally he got his chance, and he stepped up. And I really do think he needed something positive to happen, because that's a long time to go without any positive reinforcement at the NBA level.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a lot of practices. You're not getting in games. Yeah, you're working out. You're getting better. But you don't know for sure that you're getting better. You don't know for sure, like, this is really working. Now he sees that. Even if he goes back to the bench, he sees, okay, all this work I'm putting in, it's worth it. Like, I am getting better. I am becoming a more legitimate basketball player. And I think that's huge for him.
Yeah, any kind of confidence boost you can get is great. It's kind of funny. We're so impatient, too. You know, this is his second year, and it's not even Christmas yet. And we're talking about how the youngest guy on the team in this situation, at this point of his career, is – He did some good things, and everybody's like, oh, phew, finally. You know, it's just kind of funny how impatient we can be. And I get it. I'm just as guilty as anybody. But I don't know. Maybe people are – it's not necessarily impatient with him. It's just people – maybe they're worried more about Danny Ainge's draft picks at the end of the first round and just – whether Young kind of fell into the J.R. Giddens kind of mold, Bill Walker or whatever his name is now, I think after a few duds at that level of the draft, Fab Mello, that to see Young struggle, I think maybe a lot of people were worried, like, oh, here we go again. So, but nice to see. It's good. And hopefully he can continue that. And whenever he does get minutes, he can contribute. You brought up Jared Sullinger, and we got a couple of questions about that. So Curse of Javon tweeted us, what do we do with Sullinger going forward? Trade him or re-sign him? I say trade. I didn't say that. He said that. And B simply asks, do we pay Sully or nah? So you say that the Celtics seem to want to keep Jared Sullinger, which would make some sense, I think. He's a restricted free agent, so why not make him the qualifying offer and kind of see what the market bears, right?
Yeah, that's always been what Danny Ainge has done in the past. Actually, no, it's not. I take that back. They signed Crowder really quickly. They signed Avery Bradley really quickly. So Ainge doesn't always wait for the market to dictate things. I don't know what exactly they plan to do with Sullinger. He could be any of these guys could be trade chips, because as we know, the Celtics want more talent, and if they can get more talent, I don't think there's a single player on their roster who's off the table. I think Marcus Smart's probably the closest to untouchable. But I think if the right offer comes along, any of these guys could go. I do think they like Sullinger. They like what he does. They like the improvements he's made this season, especially defensively and on the glass. And he seems to be in a good place right now with his game, with his mentality. And even when he hasn't shot the ball well in some of these recent games, and he's still, I think, making a positive impact. So that's promising. He needs to, I still think, I stress this a lot, he needs to get to the, learn how to get to the free throw line. He needs to learn, he needs to boost his scoring efficiency somehow, because it's tough when your power forward or center, whatever he is, doesn't shoot even an average efficiency from the court. And he doesn't get a ton of easy baskets because he's not that athletic. So that's my one issue with his game moving forward. Other than that, he's really coming along well. And I don't know how much money he'll be worth in the new landscape. Money is going to be crazy, crazy, crazy. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens with all those guys. And
what's the salary cap going up to next year? Like 80 something million?
Yeah, it's maybe 90. It's going up 20 something ish each of the next 2 years, I believe. So it's going to be nuts. And the free agent class isn't that good. So guys like Sullinger, who are capable starters, they're going to get paid. So Celtics are going to have to pony up to keep him. We'll see how that goes. The good thing is, from that standpoint, they have a lot of really good contracts. Avery Bradley's contract is a good one. Isaiah Thomas, great one. Marcus Smart, you know, he's still on his rookie deal. So the Celtics have a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Look, Jared Sullinger, he's going to make at least $10 million a year next year. He's going to get a contract, a multi-year deal that's going to pay him at least $10 million a year. It has to. In this climate, with the salary cap going up to the $85 to $90 million range, whatever it is, $10 million for a guy like Sullinger is nothing. I mean, you might say he's worth like six or seven. You know, you might want to put him in the, you know, does he deserve to get paid more than Jay Crowder? I don't think so, but he's going to get paid more than Jay Crowder because that deal suddenly becomes a much smaller part of the salary cap. I don't understand. Like, I look at Jay Crowder's deal. Man, they really got a bargain with him. I feel like in 2 years, when you see Jay Crowder still making less than $7 million, people are going to go, wow, how is he making so little? Same thing with Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, those guys signed their contracts maybe at the wrong time. I don't know, man. Those guys, and it was weird because both those guys had already established, like Crowder was a huge piece of that playoff run. People knew he was on the rise, very good defender, versatile guy. They knew Thomas could score the heck out of the basketball, and still those guys are on like very, very small deals considering their worth.
And remember when Avery Bradley was overpaid? Remember when people hated that deal?
Yeah, that didn't last too long. That feeling went away very quickly. He's had a really, really good season.
Yeah, it's been tremendous. Okay, I think it's time for code word number two. So code word number one earlier, if you missed it, sorry. I'm not going to give it to you again. You should have heard it the first time, damn it. Go back and get it now, because code word number two is coming. First person to tweet me both code words gets the tickets to the Timberwolves game. Code word number two is ticket. That's the second code word.
I was going to guess. I did not know these code words, and I was going to guess that after the first one, but I didn't want to ruin it. I figured once truth came, that ticket had to be the other one.
Ticket was number two. I mean, come on. It's just, of course.
I would have won the tickets because I would have heard truth first, and then I would have tweeted in immediately.
You would have guessed. You would have tried it. Who knows? Maybe somebody will. Maybe the winner will have already done that. But I'll know, because as soon as I post the show, if somebody tweets me 20 minutes into it, that they didn't listen all the way through.
Maybe. But hey, if they guessed it, if they had that next level knowledge to know that truth was one, ticket had to be the other. I think they earned it.
Interesting. You put me in quite a quandary here.
I think they earned it. I would give them the ticket.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll see. So those are your two code words. Tweet them to me, and you will win. If you didn't win, remember, you can get into the Garden to see KG and the Timberwolves. It's a good young team. It's a great ticket to go get. You can get in for only $20 on the TickIQ app. And again, it's something that I use and the guys at Red's Army use when we want to buy tickets to Celtics games. They always have the cheapest tickets, and you can get an instant discount using their IQ point system. So go to your app store, Google Play, iTunes, whatever your app store is, download the TickIQ app, T-I-Q-I-Q. Okay.
I just want to say right now, I've got some beef with Boston fans right now.
Beef?
I've got beef. So my buddy was telling me the other night that tickets to the Lakers game.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant on his farewell tour. It'll be his last time to the TD Garden. Tickets to the Lakers game, I've heard, are close to $200, more than they were for the Warriors game even. And you can get into Kevin Garnett's possible last game at the TD Garden for $20. I've got some beef with Boston fans. You give the big ticket a send off to remember. If this is his last time, this should be really special when he's there. And obviously, he doesn't want the farewell tour that Kobe has. I thought that was great, by the way, when Danny Ainge went on the radio on Tutcher and Rich and said, you know, I wish he didn't do the farewell tour. I hate farewell tours. I was like, such a dig at Kobe. Yeah. And he went on to express respect for Kobe. Everyone has respect for Kobe. But that was funny. Ainge just like, come on, man. We don't want to give you farewells in every city. Just step away from the game quietly at the end of your career. Right. That was funny to me.
That was good.
Yeah.
I hope the Celtics don't do anything crazy for Kobe. Like I understand why Philly did it because, you know, hometown boy and all of that. But if the Celtics, I'd be disappointed. Like the Celtics should just announce that Kobe, you know, the starting lineups, no special tribute, no video, no nothing. I don't want any of that stuff. People, I think, when Kobe is introduced, I think he should get a nice round of applause as a show of respect for, you know, as a competitor and all of that. Give him a nice round of applause for his last game when he's introduced, and then boo the hell out of him for the rest of the game because, you know, that's what he should get in Boston. A Laker retiring, in-game boos all the time. As soon as he touches the ball, boom.
One of the Celtics owners said they should show highlights of the 2008 finals. And that would be amazing.
Okay.
That would be amazing. Like if they just had Leon Poe dunking on everyone and Kevin Garnett pounding his chest and that little one-handed shot over Gasol and game six, everyone hitting jumpers. That would be unreal. If they just showed like a 5-minute video tribute of all the 2008 highlights and Kobe's like reactions to everything going on, that would be perfect. And I think Kobe would appreciate that. I think Kobe would, that's the ultimate respect to give him trash. I think would be perfectly fitting because he's such a competitor, and to give him crap would be fantastic.
That would be okay. So I take back what I said before. That video tribute I'd be okay with. Totally fine with that. I endorse it fully. Oh, that would be so amazing.
Yeah.
That would be so amazing.
Yeah. Oh, Pierce giving him like 38 points in game five. Ray Allen going by Sasha Vujacic. It would be perfect. It would be so great. I really wish they had the balls to pull that one off. Like if they were just like, you know what, screw it, let's do
that
it.
That would be so fantastic.
It would be perfect. And I really do think Kobe would appreciate that. I think he would find that pretty funny.
But first things first, Minnesota visits December 21st. It's a Monday night. I think that you're right, though. The Celtics fans should pack the arena. Not that there's ever any real problem packing the Garden, which is, you know, one of the nice things about the Celtics and the fans, but I think there should be a little something extra for Garnett. Potentially, I can't imagine him coming back next year, but I think they should do something nice for Garnett there. Okay, let's get to some more of these Twitter questions because we have a million of them, and we should answer them because you took the time to ask. So starts with Bill, who says on December 15th, just 2 days from now, Ainge will start making calls. What do the Celtics need, and who can they realistically target? So we're starting to get the trade talk because the 15th is the deadline for the guys who were signed, acquired over the summer. They can now be traded. And you remember last year, this is about the time the Rondo rumors started to pick up. So a trade in December is something to maybe look for. But who would the Celtics potentially target? What do? You start going to maybe Memphis, and do you say, hey, things aren't going so great for you? Do you want to start to sell off some of your pieces? Do you try to go for like a Conley? Or do you call someone else who's struggling, another team that's struggling, and try to cherry pick one of their players and start using some of these later draft picks to maybe make that happen?
Conley's a free agent at the end of this year, isn't he? So
yes, he is.
So I wouldn't do that. I think what we've seen so far this year, they're really the only thing they really, really need is more wing scoring. They already have a top five defense. We can talk about them needing rim protection if you want, but Sullinger, Johnson, those guys, even Olynyk is a much improved defender. Olynyk, his defense is much, much better. He's very sharp. Sometimes I watch him like being the help guy on the pick and roll defense from across the lane. He's really good at that. He gets there early. He gets a lot of steals in that situation. So they've done a good job. They have, I think it's the number four defense right now without who you would really call a rim protector. So they don't need a rim protector. They do need scoring, wing scoring, get some size on the wing, some scoring. That's why I think Tobias Harris would have been a good guy to target over the offseason. And he wasn't going anywhere because Orlando was willing to sign him to a max deal. But guys like that, guys with size, guys who can play multiple positions, guys who can fill up some buckets. Those guys are tough to find, and I think those are the type of guys Angel will be looking for.
We know that the Clippers are starting to take calls. Do we?
And shooters too. More shooters. They need more shooters.
Right. Is there anybody on the Clippers that? Because they're gonna want to clear away, but they're looking at like Lance Stephenson and
yeah, you don't want any of the guys they're gonna sell. No.
Josh Smith. You don't want any of that.
Yeah. No. Stay away. Stay away.
I can't think of anybody else who might be moving players just yet that would really
the problem is everybody's competitive in the East. Out West, it's like the teams that are struggling are, you know, maybe the Pelicans sell off somebody, but the guys you'd want from them, maybe Ryan Anderson?
Yeah, but he's a free agent too, I think.
Is he? Yeah.
I think he's a free agent after this year. So
then there's a lot too many competitive teams, I think, to have guys being sold off. And like the West, yeah, the Clippers are struggling. What are they going to do? I mean, they have no obvious path to move forward if they start to tear that up. So they're kind of in that weird situation where their window might be closed, but like, where's the other window?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Ryan Anderson's unrestricted free agent after this year. So he's a guy you could target in free agency. Another interesting guy, speaking of free agents, is Mirza Teletovic, who I think could be an interesting guy to target in the offseason, but he's a free agent as well. So next year's free agency isn't tremendously great, but I think it could be a chance to get some guys who maybe upgrade the supporting cast a little bit. And of course, like this question from Matt, what do you think Derek Favors? I think he's a solid player to target with the Brooklyn pick. I think Derek Favors is playing really great. I think he's really having a good season. But why would Utah get rid of him? I think Utah is a strong up-and-coming team. He's a key player for them. There's no way they would let him go. I don't care what – I mean, even if you had the number one overall pick, I mean, that would be, I think, something that I don't know if they would even do it for that, because why would you get rid of a key player, a good young player who's playing so well? So –
he and Gobert are a monster defensive front court pair. Yeah. Just monster. I didn't think Favors was going to get, after his first few years in the league, he's another guy that's like, shows you need to have patience with the young guys, because he's just getting better and better. He's had a really, really good year for Utah.
That Utah team is fun. That's a fun team.
They are fun. They are fun.
And it's nice that they didn't have to tank for 10 years to get to be good.
You hate tanking.
I hate it.
There's nothing you hate worse than tanking.
I hate it so much. Hate it with a passion. Even the 1 year, like just intentionally lose, just grates me. I get it. I get why people say it. I hate it. And I don't know whether I love what's happening in Philly right now or if I dislike what's happening in Philly right now. I love it because, you know, screw Hinkie and his process. I love that. And I love that they're finally fed up with him, and that it's taken a league mandate to get them to adjust their ways. That I like. But on the other hand, we're sitting here talking about who the Celtics might target. Well, now that they're shaking things up, they've got a ton of picks. They've got young talent. They have assets that they can move. Are they going to start? Is Colangelo going to start accelerating the process? And now all of a sudden the Celtics have a competitor when it comes to giving things up to get things in return. That's something that I'm not so – I'm a little iffy on.
So you want the Sixers to tank again is what you're saying.
Well, I want the Sixers to fail miserably, and I want this entire process to just be an abject failure, which it's starting to be. There is the possibility of them getting another number one pick and finding like a couple of good players and turning it around and claiming some level of success. But what I don't want is for the failure to turn into something that hurts Boston. And if they go out there and start becoming players on the free agent market, in the trade market, and taking, you know, it becomes a bidding war between Philly and Boston, I don't want that. I just want Hinkie to be completely embarrassed and discredited.
It's funny because they were another team that was going after Isaiah Thomas for that Scott him. And I think their plan was to try to flip him later, but yeah, they could have raised the bid, and the Celtics probably wouldn't have had Isaiah Thomas. So who knows what would happen there. Sixers. Did you see that picture of Joel Embiid? He is huge now. Like,
I didn't see it.
That guy is a monster. He looked like Dwight Howard in his prime, like all jacked up.
Really? I did not see that.
Like, absolutely enormous. And if that guy ever gets healthy, and he's apparently 7'2" now, he's grown 2 inches. I mean, he might never ever play an NBA game, but if he does, he could be a stud. He could be the one that makes Hinkie's plan look genius. Obviously you can't trust him.
What do you do? Start three centers?
Trade him.
I don't care. Screw Hinkie. Let's go back to the Twitter questions. Next question. I think we're going to go back to the Warriors game. Because Justin has these points about Draymond Green. Draymond, he says, was on 5 fouls for 15 minutes, the end of the fourth and 2 OTs, and he was terrific. But why didn't we target him? He had four rebounds, 2 points, a steal, and an assist in the double OT. why didn't the Celtics, when Green had those five fouls, why didn't the Celtics go after him to try to get him out of the game? That could have been a game changer for the Celtics.
Well, because going after him means going after maybe the best defensive player in the entire league. Like, yeah, you try to get a foul on him, but if he doesn't foul you, that you're using the lowest percentage option. So it goes both ways. You can try to get him the fouls, or you can just waste a string of possessions because he's an awesome defender and you're trying to go after him. I do think Kelly Olynyk attacked him a little bit when he was in foul trouble, but yeah, I mean, you can go back and doubt that maybe, but I'm not too worried about not going after one of the very best defenders in the league. You want to steer things away from him. And they were picking apart switches in that stretch. Like, they got Kelly Olynyk on some smaller guys. Go after the weaker links. Don't go after Draymond Green, to me.
Yeah, no, I it's totally valid. It's interesting because I can see both sides of that. You want to get Green out. Because he's so good, you want to get him out of the game. And with that five fouls, you just wonder, were there things that they could have done to force the issue a little bit? But on the other hand, you get out of your regular game plan. Is it worth getting out of your regular game plan? Are you going to hurt yourself trying to hurt them? So,
and also, they don't have a lot of guys who are good at drawing fouls, like with the exception of Isaiah Thomas and the big guys who would have, in most cases, be going after Draymond Green. I guess they switch a lot, so maybe the guards would have too. But they don't have a lot of guys who are capable of drawing fouls. And he's such a good defender. He's smart enough that he could have, I think, influenced their drives even with five fouls.
Yeah. Now he's a tremendous player. And talk about another guy who came out of nowhere, and he's a star player. He's the key.
Well, he didn't really come out of – like, he was one of the greatest college players. And so he didn't really come out of nowhere. And that's another – you were talking about how luck impacts everything. If David Lee doesn't get hurt last season in preseason, does Draymond Green step into the starting lineup? Like, he would have probably at some point, right? But it wouldn't have happened right away. And that was as important as anything for the Warriors.
I mean, obviously Steph Curry is a god. And he's an MVP. He's probably going to be the MVP again. But – Draymond Green, I don't want to say like Draymond Green is probably the most important player on the Warriors, but he is as important as anybody else, even as important as Steph Curry, because he makes the matchup problem that he creates, first of all, on when they have the ball is ridiculous. The things that he can do on offense to spread things out, the shots that he can make, it's so supremely important. But defensively, what he does for that team, being undersized, he's not a huge guy, but he's so good. It's completely challenged, by the way, the entire notion of needing a quote-unquote rim protector.
No, he is a rim protector. He's 6'6", 6'5", whatever he is. He is a rim protector. The problem with teams trying to find another Draymond Green is that they don't exist. There is nobody in the world who can guard five positions, hit threes, facilitate in the pick and roll on offense. He just does so many things.
He's not the traditional, like, when, because we've got questions about getting a rim protector. Yeah, he can protect the rim, but not in the traditional sense.
I mean, he had five blocks against the Celtics. He is.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, but he is a rim protector.
He's not the guy that you plant in the middle of the lane and people are afraid to drive on because he's so big he's going to fly. He's not like the Hassan Whiteside type of guy. He's actually better at protecting the rim than Whiteside, I think. But
yeah, no, he guards your guard and then he slides over and blocks your big man.
But
he's unbelievable. He's
right.
To me, he's a top 10 player in the league. And I, to your point about them, like him being maybe the most important, I think Stephen Curry is the most important because he's ridiculous. I just think they fit so well. Like that team is just the perfect fit for each other. Like Stephen Curry draws two guys in the pick and roll, and then Draymond Green gets the ball, and it's basically like a fast break every time he gets the ball in the pick and roll. It's 4-on-3 because two guys are on Steph, and he is such a good passer. They're so fun to watch. I love that team.
Not love that team. I don't like the Warriors. I really have to question your ability to comprehend basketball. If you don't like what the Warriors are doing, they are. And the best part I think about the Warriors is they're so benign that unless you have a territorial rivalry with them, there's nothing to hate about that team. The Warriors, they're just, and everybody can like them. Everybody. It's not like the Lakers are doing that. And we're sitting there like, oh, I hate to say this, but the Lakers are fun. You know?
Although to me, that's kind of like, I don't know if I understand that. I think it's because the Warriors kind of came out of nowhere. Like they were just like a mediocre Western Conference team. And then they become a juggernaut. But there's like some things not to like about that team. Like Draymond Green, he'll pound his chest right on top of you. Like he stood over Isaiah Thomas and was pounding his chest. Like that team, that's a cocky team now. Like they talk a lot of junk. I could see people hating them, but instead it's gone the other way. And everyone just respects them so much. And they're so fun to watch. And they have so much fun playing together. Like that team just enjoys basketball. Yeah. They enjoy going out and throttling you, and they love it. It's fun to watch that joy.
People will later on start to hate them because that's what we do. We build things up and tear them down. Eventually, people are going to. But right now, you can't not like them. Right now, they're just so much fun. It's just so much fun, and I mean, it's just. Yeah, Steph Curry, the stuff that he's doing. Oh my God, I got to get away from this because we're gonna go 2 hours, and one of it's gonna be the all about the Warriors. next question, Nathan Hodge asks: after Thomas and Bradley, who are the Celtics' third and fourth best players? Seems like there are five candidates for that. Marcus Smart, can we include him because
Smart, Sullinger,
Crowder,
Crowder, Johnson's been really good lately. I mean,
I think I'm going to say
the
Smart.
Thing about them is they're just so even.
They are.
They're so even. It's like
I'm going to say Smart and Crowder are my picks.
Yeah, I would, but Sullinger's not too far behind.
No,
Johnson, he allows them to do some fun things. Like at the end of that Charlotte game, they went small with Crowder at the four, and they switched everything. Johnson was guarding Batum at times, blocked him. Like he switched on to Kemba, forced him into a tough shot. Kemba hit it though. So it's like. He allows them to do a lot of things that they weren't able to do when Tyler Zeller was their center.
Sad. Zeller's a good player.
Yeah, he is. Poor Zeller.
It's sad. He's gonna be a nice player for somebody else, I guess, next year. I can't imagine. But I say that, but you know, so many of these guys could be gone. We might end up re-signing him for all we know. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows there?
Celtics Welsh asks, is it time to give David Lee some of Amir Johnson's minutes? Speaking of Amir Johnson.
No.
No.
No. Not Amir. Not Amir.
Think about that for a second, Jay, and give me your answer after a little bit of thought.
No, definitely no. Not.
It's time
no.
to get, I think it's time to give Amir Johnson more of David Lee's minutes. How about that?
I'm not sure I would give Amir just because of his health stuff. I would limit his minutes throughout the regular season. I do think once they can go small, I think David Lee will see his minutes cut. And he's done some good things. Like individually, he does some good things. Like he had that great run against the Warriors. Who else did he have a great run against? The previous game against Chicago, he had awesome fourth quarter, that huge dunk where he was staring into the crowd. But he just doesn't impact their team as much as some other guys do. He doesn't spread the floor. And that stuff matters a lot, especially for a team that lacks shooting in a lot of other places. So
I agree. I definitely think that you can use those minutes better with somebody else. Maybe Hunter or somebody, anybody, except Evan Turner.
Evan Turner, man. Evan Turner is a. A worth he has a solid worth to the team.
I know.
He's become a much will you admit he's become a much better defender?
Yeah. Boston B-Ball says, do you think Evan Turner is finally getting the credit he deserves for his contribution to the Seas? So that's why I brought up Evan Turner.
Not from John. Not from John.
No,
But will you admit he's become a much better defender?
I'm the guy who earlier in the show said that he should have the ball down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So let's not.
You're so up and down on Turner.
It kills me.
And then once he gets the ball, you'll complain.
Give it to somebody else. But he's got to have
it. You'll complain once he gets it.
I will admit, look, we all know what my feelings are on Evan Turner. I will begrudgingly give him the credit when it's deserved. But the leash is small with me. The second he has a bad game, I'm way back down to my, you know, get him out of here mode. But the Celtics are actually using him the only way that he can be effective, which is basically as your backup point guard. That is playing him off the ball and having him be your small forward, not really the way to go. But having him run the offense, even though sometimes he dribbles the ball way too much and forces a couple of things, he is definitely most effective in that role that they're using him now. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. It's just sometimes he drives me absolutely crazy. But Jay, to get to your question, he has been a much better defender. He has worth for the Boston Celtics. So there. Everybody shut up about it now.
There you go. At least he'll admit it. He's been, and I think you're trying to pigeonhole him as a point. I think his value is that he can play so many positions. Like, he can guard 1, 2, and 3. He can switch on to 4s for a short period of time. He rebounds. He can handle the ball. Like, he does a lot of good things. And I do think that the thing that's most frustrating about him, when he screws up, it's like, like, just such a, it's like a highlight screw up.
Yeah.
Like, you remember it when Evan Turner screws
when he
up.
He throws the ball over Kelly Olynyk's head by 4 feet and gets into the 8th row.
Yeah. You remember it when Evan Turner screws up. His, by the way, his 3-point shooting has been just dreadful so far this year. So hopefully he'll start to pick that up, because he hasn't been this bad. I want to say he was something like 28% previously in his career. Now he's like really, really low. He's in the single digits, I believe.
I'll look it up right now. Because, yeah.
He's due to pick that up. But he still has some worth to this team.
He doesn't shoot a ton of them, which is good. At least he's not taking million three-pointers and missing them all. He's still only taking like a couple here and there.
At least he's not 2014 Sullinger.
Right. he is shooting right now 13.9% from three.
Yeah.
13.9. And his shooting percent is actually not great. It's 41.5%. But he has only taken 36 threes in 24 games. So, and he's made 5.
Yeah, he's struggling.
Amir Johnson.
He's really struggling.
Amir Johnson has made more threes than Evan Turner. How about that?
Yep.
So, fine.
I mean, if Avery Bradley had hit one more three last night, he would have hit as many as Evan Turner has all season.
Right. So, that's the type of three-point shooter Evan Turner is. But let's not go down that road. Stop being negative, Jay, about Evan Turner.
No,
I will have no more of your Evan Turner slander, Jay.
I think
he's a productive player.
He does a lot of things the Celtics need, and his defense. I'm shocked by his defense, because that was always the biggest knock on him, and he's really become strong. He forces turnovers. He gets into the ball. He blocked Stephen Curry twice the other day and tied him up on the ground. That was a bad foul call at the end of that Warriors game when he was on the ground with Curry and they sent Curry to the line. That was a huge, huge call.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Evan Turner, out of nowhere, plus defender, and still the cause of many John Corrales nightmares.
It is what it is. Final Twitter question. Are you concerned with how competitive the Nets have been as of late? Competitive? I mean, the Nets are still probably the second. So I don't.
They're not good. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's out for weeks, which is
a huge loss.
Yeah, that's a monster loss. Right now, and the Sixers, they might be the third worst team. I think the Pelicans will improve now that they're relatively healthy. The Nets without Rondae Hollis-Jefferson are in for a rough stretch. Number one worst team, like I think some Celtics fans thought at the beginning of the season and like looked possible at the beginning of the season, but they'll be one of the five worst teams in the league. I don't think there's much doubt about that.
And I mean, people who have been following me know my feelings. Like, I don't, like, I saw a Bill Simmons tweet who basically said the dream of the Brooklyn Nets being the worst team is over. Trade the pick for Boogie Cousins. And it's like, how rarely does the worst team get the number one pick? It happened, what, last year for the first time in 10 years or something like that? It's,
yeah, you only get a 25% chance if you're the worst team in the league.
Like, people, I know the odds are slightly better being the worst team. I get that. But again, you have a 75% chance of not getting that pick. You got to look at it that way. And I know you have an 80-something percent chance of not getting the first pick if you're the second or third worst team. But those odds are so huge that it almost doesn't matter. So as long as you're in the mix, like, I don't care that they're not the absolute worst team in the league. As long as they're in that bottom two or three, that's fine. And then you just let the odds play out. You let things play out. But that reactionary tweet, that type of attitude, I hate it. I hate it as much as any tanking talk. Like, it drives me absolutely up a wall when people get so obsessed with those tiny little percentage points and they got to lose one more game and maybe they'll get a better draft. Just let it go. Let it happen. It's fine. They're fine. So I'm happy with where they are. They're not going to go on a huge run. They're not going to go suddenly become competitive. They're still going to lose these games. And there's the ever-present threat of a Lopez foot injury. And who knows what's going to happen with Joe Johnson. They're talking about trading him or even buying him out. So there's a lot of things that could happen that will go wrong in Brooklyn that will make the Celtics fans very happy about the chances in the draft.
By the way, Rob Gronkowski playing tonight for the Patriots. That big news for us. this isn't a Patriots podcast, but Rob Gronkowski is back. I thought he was done for the season, man, when he first went down. So very, very exciting news about Gronk.
Breaking news. Oh, really? What is it? What's happening with the Celtics? Gronk is back. Go Gronk.
The Super Bowl is still a chance.
Seriously, though. When Gronk went down and they carted him off, we were just like, did you say the same thing I said? I'm like, well, it was a good season. It was fun. What's going on with hockey?
More breaking news. Kyrie Irving will not play in Boston on Tuesday.
He's
coming back soon. And Tuesday was a possibility. They just ruled him out.
I didn't think that he was even a possibility. I never expected him to be back so soon. I thought it was going to be after January. But that's a break, I guess. I don't think the Celtics are going to win that game, but maybe they will because they're a good team.
That'll be another fun game at the TD Garden. This is like a fun stretch of games. The Warriors, the Cavs, the return of Garnett, maybe his goodbye. The Kobe Bryant farewell tour coming up, just a huge string of like really entertaining matchups.
I love it. We have gone way long in this show, but that's okay.
Way long.
This is our.
But we gave away two tickets, so people can't be mad at us.
Can't be mad. And, you know, We got the requisite amount of Evan Turner, disgruntled, guttural noises that I make when that happens, when we mention his name. We got that in there. A lot to talk about. And we probably have left a lot of stuff out. We'll just save it for the next show.
It was an action-packed week.
It was. So we'll leave it there and say see you next week on the Rain and Jays podcast.
Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.